Chapter 4. Never you not have seen Frog as modest, as natural, sweet as she was. And when he himself agitated to jump purely and simply upon plain earth, she does more ground in one jump than any beast of his species than you can know. To jump plain, this was his strong. When he himself agitated for that, Smiley multiplied the bets upon her, as long as there to him remained a red. It must to know, Smiley was monstrously proud of his frog, and he of it was right, for some men who were traveled, who had all seen, said that they to him would be injurious to him compare to another frog. Smiley guarded Daniel in a little box lattice which he carried bitums to the village for some bet. One day an individual stranger at the camp him arrested with his box and him said, "What is this, that you of them shut up there within?" Smiley said, with an air indifferent, "That could be a parakeet, or a syringe, lanceron, but this no, is nothing of such, it not is but a frog." The individual it took, it regarded with care, it turned from one side, and from the other, then he said, "Teens, in effect, at what is she good? My God!" Responds Smiley, always with an air disengaged, "She is good for one thing, to my notice, a ma navis, she can better in jumping elp and batter and sawtent, all frogs of the county of Calaveras." The individual retook the box, it examined of new longly, and it rendered to Smiley in saying with an air deliberate, "A bean. I no saw, not that that frog had nothing of better than each frog."
Genie voice pause case et grenouille et rindum uqqun grenouille. If that isn't grammar gone to seed, then I count myself no judge.
M.T. Possible that you not it saw not, said Smiley. Possible that you comprehend frogs. Possible that you not you there comprehend nothing. Possible that you had of the experience, and possible that you not be but an amateur. Of all manner that out manier, I bet $40 that she better in jumping no matter which frog of the county of Calaveras. The individual reflected a second, and said like sad, "I not am but a stranger here, I know of not a frog, but if I of it had one, I would embrace the bet." "Strong well," responds Smiley, "nothing of more facility. If you will hold my box a minute, I go you to search a frog."
"Jeer I vouse churcher."
"Behold, then, the individual, who guards the box, who puts his $40 upon those of Smiley, and who attends
a coup I attend."
He attended enough long times, reflecting all solely. "And figure you, that he takes Daniel, him opens the mouth by force, and with a teaspoon him fills with shot of the hunt, even him fills just to the chin, then he him puts by the earth." Smiley during these times, was at slopping in a swamp. Finally he trapped
Atrop,
a frog, him carried to that individual, and said, "Now if you be ready, put them all against Daniel with their before feet upon the same line, and I give the signal." Then he added :1, 2, 3, advance. Him and the individual touched their frogs by behind, and the frog knew put to jump smartly, but Daniel himself lifted ponderously, exalted the shoulders thus, like a Frenchman, to what good? He not could budge, he is planted solid like a church, he not advance no more than if one him had put at the anchor. Smiley was surprised and disgusted, but he know himself doubted not of the turn, being intended,
may still nisi doubted pas du tour, mean intendu.
The individual impocated the silver, himself with it went, and of it himself in going is it, that he know gives not a jerk of thumb over the shoulder like that at the poor Daniel, in saying with his air deliberate,
l'individu impich largent, sen va en sen aland est sequel ni don pas un coup de paus par desis lepal. Com ga, o pover Daniel, and Dyson, the son heir delibere,
a bean. I no see, not that that frog has nothing of better than another. Smiley himself scratched long times the head, the eyes fixed upon Daniel, until that which at last he said, "I me demand how the devil it makes itself, that this beast has refused. Is it that as he had something? One would believe, that she is stuffed." He grasped Daniel by the skin of the neck, him lifted and said, The wolf me bite, if he no weigh not 5 pounds. He him reversed and the unhappy belched 2 handfuls of shot a la malheru, etc. When Smiley recognized how it was, he was like mad. He deposited his frog by the earth, and ran after that individual, but he not him caught never. Such is the jumping frog, to the distorted French eye. I claim that I never put together such an odious mixture of bad grammar and delirium tremens in my life. And what has a poor foreigner like me done, to be abused and misrepresented like this? When I say, well, I don't see no pints about that frog that's any better than any other frog, is it kind, is it just, for this Frenchman to try to make it appear that I said, a bean? I no saw, not that that frog had nothing of better than each frog. I have no heart to write more. I never felt so about anything before. Hartford, March, 1875. Journalism in Tennessee, written about 1871. The editor of the Memphis Avalanche swoops thus mildly down upon a correspondent who posted him as a radical. Hiley was writing the first word, the middle, dotting his I's, crossing his T's, and punching his period. He knew he was concocting a sentence that was saturated with infamy and reeking with falsehood. Exchange. I was told by the physician that a southern climate would improve my health, and so I went down to Tennessee and got a berth on the Morning Glory and Johnson County War Whoop as associate editor. When I went on duty, I found the chief editor sitting tilted back in a three-legged chair with his feet on a pine table. There was another pine table in the room and another afflicted chair, and both were half buried under newspapers, and scraps and sheets of manuscript. There was a wooden box of sand, sprinkled with cigar stubs and LD soldiers, and a stove with a door hanging by its upper hinge. The chief editor had a long-tailed black cloth frock coat on, and white linen pants. His boots were small and neatly blacked. He wore a ruffled shirt, a large seal ring, a standing collar of obsolete pattern, and a checkered neckerchief with the ends hanging down. Date of costume about 1848. He was smoking a cigar, and trying to think of a word, and in pawing his hair he had rumpled his locks a good deal. He was scowling fearfully, and I judged that he was concocting a particularly naughty editorial. He told me to take the exchanges and skim through them, and write up the period of the Tennessee press, condensing into the article all of their contents that seemed of interest. I wrote as follows. Spirit of the Tennessee press, the editors of the semi-weekly Earthquake evidently labor under a misapprehension with regard to the Dallahack Railroad. It is not the object of the company to leave Buzzardville off to one side. On the contrary, they consider it one of the most important points along the line, and consequently can have no desire to slight it. The gentlemen of the Earthquake will, of course, take pleasure in making the correction. John W. Blossom, Esquire, the able editor of the Higginsville Thunderbolt and Battle Cry of Freedom, arrived in the city yesterday. He is stopping at the Van Buren House. We observe that our contemporary of the Mud Springs Morning Owl has fallen into the error of supposing that the election of Van Werter is not an established fact, but he will have discovered his mistake before this reminder reaches him, no doubt. He was doubtless misled by incomplete election returns. It is pleasant to note that the city of Blathersville is endeavoring to contract with some New York gentlemen to pave its well-nigh impassable streets with the Nicholson pavement. The Daily Herald urges the measure with ability, and seems confident of ultimate success. I pass my manuscript over to the chief editor for acceptance, alteration, or destruction. He glanced at it and his face clouded. He ran his eye down the pages, and his countenance grew portentous. It was easy to see that something was wrong. Presently he sprang up and said, "Thunder and lightning! Do you suppose I am going to speak of those cattle that way? Do you suppose my subscribers are going to stand such cruel as that? Give me the pen.
I never saw a pen scrape and scratch its way so viciously, or plow through another man's verbs and adjectives so relentlessly. While he was in the midst of his work, somebody shot at him through the open window and marred the symmetry of my ear. Ah, said he, that is that scoundrel Smith, of the moral volcano he was due yesterday. And he snatched a navy revolver from his belt and fired. Smith dropped, shot in the thigh. The shot spoiled Smith's aim, who was just taking a second chance, and he crippled a stranger. It was me. Merely a finger shot off. Then the chief editor went on with his erasure and interlineations. Just as he finished them, a hand grenade came down the stovepipe, and the explosion shivered the stove into 1,000 fragments. However, it did no further damage, except that a vagrant piece knocked a couple of my teeth out. That stove is utterly ruined, said the chief editor. I said I believed it was. Well, no matter, don't want it this kind of weather. I know the man that did it. I'll get him. Now, here is the way this stuff ought to be written. I took the manuscript. It was scarred with erasures and interlineations till its mother wouldn't have known it, if it had had one. It now read as follows. Spirit of the Tennessee Press, the inveterate liars of the semi-weekly earthquake are evidently endeavoring to palm off upon a noble and chivalrous people another of their vile and brutal falsehoods with regard to that most glorious conception of the 19th century, the Ballack Railroad. The idea that Buzzardville was to be left off at one side originated in their own fulsome brains, or rather in the settlings which they regard as brains. They had better swallow this lie if they want to save their abandoned reptile carcasses the cowhiding they so richly deserve. That ass, Blossom, of the Higginsville Thunderbolt and Battle Cry of Freedom, is down here again spawning at the Van Buren. We observe that the besotted blackguard of the Mud Springs Morning Owl is giving out, with his usual propensity for lying, that Van Werter is not elected. The heaven-born mission of journalism is to disseminate truth, to eradicate error, to educate, refine, and elevate the tone of public morals and manners, and make all men more gentle, more virtuous, more charitable, and in all ways better, and holier, and happier. And yet this black-hearted scoundrel degrades his great office persistently to the dissemination of falsehood, calumny, vituperation, and vulgarity. Blathersville wants a Nicholson pavement, it wants a jail and a poorhouse more. The idea of a pavement in a one-horse town composed of 2 gin mills, a blacksmith shop, and that mustard plaster of a newspaper, the Daily Hurrah. The crawling insect, Buckner, who edits the Hurrah, is braying about his business with his customary imbecility, and imagining that he is talking sense. Now that is the way to write peppery, and to the point. Mush and milk journalism gives me the fan tods. About this time a brick came through the window with a splintering crash, and gave me a considerable of a jolt in the back. I moved out of range, I began to feel in the way. The chief said, that was the colonel, likely. I've been expecting him for 2 days. He will be up now right away. He was correct. The colonel appeared in the door a moment afterward with a dragoon, revolver in his hand. He said, sir, have I the honor of addressing the poltroon who edits this mangy sheet? You have. Be seated, sir. Be careful of the chair, one of its legs is gone. I believe I have the honor of addressing the putrid liar, Colonel Blatherskite Tecumseh? Right, sir. I have a little account to settle with you. If you are at leisure, we will begin. I have an article on the encouraging progress of moral and intellectual development in America to finish, but there is no hurry. Begin. Both pistols rang out their fierce clamor at the same instant. The chief lost a lock of his hair, and the colonel's bullet ended its career in the fleshy part of my thigh. The colonel's left shoulder was clipped a little. They fired again. Both missed their men this time, but I got my share, a shot in the arm. At the third fire both gentlemen were wounded slightly, and I had a knuckle chipped. I then said, I believed I would go out and take a walk, as this was a private matter, and I had a delicacy about participating in it further. But both gentlemen begged me to keep my seat, and assured me that I was not in the way. They then talked about the elections, and the crops while they reloaded, and I fell to tying up my wounds. But presently they opened fire again with animation, and every shot took effect, but it is proper to remark that 5 out of the 6 fell to my share. The 6th one mortally wounded the colonel, who remarked, with fine humor, that he would have to say good morning now, as he had business uptown. He then inquired the way to the undertaker's and left. The chief turned to me and said, I am expecting company to dinner, and shall have to get ready. It will be a favor to me, if you will read proof and attend to the customers. I winced a little at the idea of attending to the customers, but I was too bewildered by the fusillade, that was still ringing in my ears, to think of anything to say. He continued, Jones will be here at 3, cow item. Gillespie will call earlier, perhaps throw him out of the window. Ferguson will be along about 4, kill him. That is all for today, I believe. If you have any odd time, you may write a blistering article on the police, give the chief inspector rats. The cowhides are under the table, weapons in the drawer, ammunition there in the corner, lint, and bandages up there in the pigeonholes. In case of accident, go to Lancet, the surgeon, downstairs. He advertises we take it out in trade. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.